Before we dive into today's episode, we have an important opportunity to share with you. Every clinic has one, that person who goes above and beyond, whose dedication truly shapes the future of veterinarian medicine. Nominations are officially open for the 2026 DVM 360 Veterinarian Heroes Recognition Program. Since 2021, this program has celebrated the compassion and leadership of professionals across every corner of our field, from surgeons and emergency clinicians to the technicians, practice managers, and client service representatives who keep everything running. If you know a colleague who deserves to be recognized for their extraordinary impact, we want to hear their story. You can use the link in the show notes to submit your nomination. The deadline is Thursday, April 30th, and winners will be honored this August at Fetch Kansas City. Help us elevate the best in our profession. Nominate your veterinarian hero today.
Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. We have a phenomenal veterinary profession that we work in, but let's face it, it is stressful. It's hard, it's physically, emotionally, mentally challenging. Even if you've started out a year or even 100 years in this profession, it's hard. And we're going to chat about some ways that we could deal with, you know, our mental health as well as our physical health and, you know, just overall seeing like what we can do to better ourselves so we can do what we love to do every day in practice. And joining us is our wonderful friend, Aaron Shaw in the house. How's it going, Aaron?
Great, Adam. Great to be here. Super excited to dive into the conversation.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. And I just want to give you a shout out before we dive in, because I sat in your lecture at Fetch. You gave a really great talk on well-being. And to those of you that don't know, he's married to Dr. Kristen Kirkby Shaw, who's amazing. Shout out to Dr. Kristen. Thank you for all you do. And you really resonate. I feel like you were speaking to me, which was great. When you sit in a lecture and you're like, oh my gosh, this guy gets it. And so if you haven't, listeners, sat in Aaron Shaw's sessions or podcasts, or he does a lot of work with us at DVM 360, I encourage you to do so because you do great work. So thank you for what you do.
Thank you.
And speaking of what you do, let's learn more about it. So Aaron brings nearly 30 years of experience in rehabilitation, ergonomics, and performance coaching, and he spent his career helping people reduce pain, prevent injury, and build long-term physical durability. As an occupational therapist, injury prevention specialist, and as a husband of a veterinarian, Aaron has had the front row seat to the realities of modern veterinary medicine. He's seen how passionate, highly capable professionals can slowly burn out or get injured or leave the profession altogether, especially in understaffed and high-pressure clinics. Aaron is a founder of Project VetSpan, where he works with veterinary leaders and teams to build practical systems that support both physical and emotional resilience. His work focuses on reducing burnout, improving retention, and helping clinics become healthier, more sustainable places to work without sacrificing performance or productivity, which is great. That's a dream to the practice managers out there.
Yes, trying to get the best of both worlds, all worlds.
I love it. Okay, so you spent, you know, quite a few decades, three decades, my goodness, working in injury prevention, performance, and now in vet med space. So from your lens and your perspective, what are clinics still getting wrong about burnout and injury and overall team well-being?
Good question. So I think that first of all, shout out to my wife, Kristen, who really encouraged me for a couple of years to kind of focus on this industry, because there were some needs that, you know, my skill set kind of matched up pretty well with. So I think the more I've done research over the past couple of years, specifically into vet med, what I see is a focus on kind of the Band-Aid approach. Here's the wellness seminar. Here's the PDF on how to, you know, don't forget to, you know, sleep well and take care of yourself and go for a walk. And none of these things are incorrect, but I think what's missing is really a systems approach. So instead of really treating it as a resilience problem, it is an entire system or culture, if you will, that needs some attention. So yes, continue to focus on the individual and the, you know, encouraging all of the health and wellness things that we should be doing, but success has to come from weaving that into a culture and a system and SOPs in a practice. And I can even relate this to people outside of vet med, that it's not really a lack of knowledge, it's a lack of implementing things. So I think over my 3-decade career, what we know about health and wellness and fitness and injury prevention is only grown, much greater today than it was 30 years ago. And yet, despite having that information, generally speaking, we are less healthy as a population than we've ever been. So it's not all information, it's how do we implement. And that's where systems need to be really baked into the.
Yeah. What about some numbers? Are there some real numbers to this problem? What are the actual costs of turnover and chronic stress in a clinic?
Yes, there's some pretty good studies out there. It's actually a great article, The Economic Cost of Burnout in Vet Medicine. So there are dollar figures, and of course, every clinic is or hospital will be a little bit different, but I've seen numbers that put losing a vet tech at around $59,000. So one vet technician, so you're talking the cost of trying to rehire, loss of productivity, not to mention the added burden. I think anybody who's listening can probably relate to that time when they're either short-staffed because somebody left or somebody's out sick, and you're really just, it's a pressure cooker for everybody. And there's a financial cost related to that. And then when you talk about the doctors leaving, there's some studies that'll show that to replace a doctor is 1 to 2 times their salary. Again, in lost productivity and so on. So you could be talking hundreds of thousands of dollars from directly related to burnout and stress in the clinic. And then there's this whole other part of it that's really harder to pinpoint, but people showing up and not being able to give their A game, not doing their, but not that everybody can give an A game every single day, but if they're just on that thread of burnout and pressure and kind of getting, really kind of contemplating leaving the career, leaving their job. I mean, th there are consequences to that, and it's not fair to think that people are capable of doing their best work. So I would say the costs are very much financial, which is hard because it's not really typically it's not a line item on somebody's budget on the dollar for burnout. So it is financial, but I would also say that to have a heart and say even without the financial numbers, we're dealing with human beings. Human beings that deserve to feel safe and deserve to be in a place where they can do their best work, and the system is set up for them to do their best work. And those costs are real. So it's both human cost and literally dollars and cents.
Do you think, some of the practices that I go into now, there's a lot more wellness spaces that they have. They either have massage chairs or they have relaxation stations as part of their wellness culture that they're trying to do to help with staff retention and career satisfaction. Do you think we're there yet, or are we missing something? What are your thoughts on that?
I think those are definitely steps in the right direction. I think that it needs to be, and first of all, I think that, kudos to whoever's doing that. I still think those are probably more on the outlier side of things. But again, I'll go back to saying that it's, massage chair, great. Having more information, these, the 1 hour CEs and, lunch and learn sort of concepts, I think those are great because, without knowledge, it's hard to implement anything. You got to get buy-in. The great thing when I talk to groups is that, we're all science minded, so I can at least start to put the dots together and say, hey, we know the science of exercise and nutrition and sleep and, managing stress and how that relates to clinical outcomes and how you feel, and not to mention your lifespan and your health span. So these things are good, but I still think that it's the system needs to change. The culture has to change to make these things a long-term change. And too many, from what I see anyhow, is that there's, again, kind of, I hate to say band-aid approaches, but it's these kind of things kind of come in fits and starts. It's a wellness week, or it's an appreciation week, or it's a, hey, or it's the start of the new year, and everybody's like, oh, okay, we're going to start doing this thing. And it's, best of intentions, directionally accurate, and 2 weeks later, we don't have an infrastructure to sustain a healthy, resilient, durable practice.
I like that. And like I said, the more practices that I go to, there is a little bit of that. What I find interesting too, from the CE space, now that I work in this full time, it doesn't seem to be as a priority as it used to be when COVID hit. When we were on lockdown, it seemed like, because again, I know that, I guess, how should I word this, in the sense, like, in terms of like the choices that attendees had to sit in on a session, whether it be a medical, non-medical, wellness, practice management, without a doubt, there was a very large amount of individuals taking wellness courses, because I think we needed it, of course, with what we was going through. But interesting enough, though, Aaron, curious to get your thoughts on this, is that it seems to be less, and I, just is just my lens. I have no data to support this. It just seems the volume of attendance that are in those wellness courses are not nearly as good as it should be. So yet here we are. We know it's a huge problem in the veterinary space. We know that we need to recognize it, but those that probably should be sitting in those courses are not sitting in those courses.
Yeah, 100%. I think that, COVID was a moment in time where, like it or not, health was on the front page everywhere all the time. And so it's really hard to ignore that. And I think that maybe the silver lining is that those conversations, perhaps forced upon us, at least put the conversation on the table. So people had things to talk about, beyond just an epidemic itself, but also just kind of reflecting on how we feel and how well we're taking care of ourselves generally. And I think that health is such a, at least to speak for human health, I'm sure, there's a correlation with vet medicine as well, is that when things are going well, nobody thinks twice about it. It's only like, we only think about our health when we're sick. Otherwise you just kind of plug along. And so, and not that I want to encourage anybody to get sick, but man, if you want to appreciate being healthy, get the flu for 4 or 5 days, and you're curled up with a fever, and negotiating with your higher power what you're how you promise to be better forever after, if you can just feel better. So so I think that my personal mission is to help people achieve their potential, and I recognize that I'm coming in saying, you may not feel injured right this moment. You may not feel burned out right in this moment. You may feel like you're doing okay right this moment. But man, if what a great opportunity. If that is you, like, man, double down, invest in this so you can have a long, thriving career. Don't wait to be like far too many of the people that I talk to who are kind of burning out, kind of on edge, considering other options, or just literally, I just talked to somebody yesterday who's in academics. Had switched careers specifically. She's like, I just can't, my body couldn't take it anymore. So here I am, and she's happy with where she's at. But that story is really common, and it's just, there's an opportunity to do something better than that.
Right. I was talking to one of my good friends. He's a human internist, and his schedule is 7 days on, 7 days off, 7 days on, 7 days, regardless of like holidays. The way it rolls is just the way it rolls. And we were talking about wellness and mental health, and they are intentionally told to have a barrier on those 7 days off. Like, you cannot reach out to your clinics or your patients or whatever. And it's like healthy mental boundaries are called, or whatever. As much as they want to do it, as like you want to do and check in, you actually get notified. They're like, listen, you're not supposed to be contacting us. Like, your time off is your time off. And we were talking about it back and forth, and he's like, why do I feel like you veterinarians don't do that?
Terrible, terrible at it. But that is ex but that is a, that's a great example of a system. Like, there's the
Right.
system, kind of like it's protecting you from yourself. And
Yes,
we
exactly right.
all need that, because big hearts, and again, I come from the human healthcare space, and I am completely vested in, from day one, the patients that I see, my coaching clients. And it takes a certain amount of physical and emotional fortitude to resist either doing the check-in or responding to a check-in. And it's like, oh man, it's one of my hypothetical days off, so I should be protecting myself because I don't want to, satisfy this moment right now and then feel resentful or burned out or sick and tired of the whole thing, even though I'm kind of responsible for that. And so that
Right.
said, that, maybe proverbial slap on the wrist for reaching out when you're supposed to be on your 7 days off, that's good.
And speaking of systems, and because we talk a lot about like, oh, I hope things get better with these practical systems. Like, What does that actually look like in the real world of a busy veterinary clinic?
Yeah, good question. I think that the first and foremost, it's having a discussion. And kind of to go back to what you said about the during the COVID days when people were maybe environmentally in a position to have this discussion, it's feeling that it's okay to talk about feeling burned out or not wanting to be burned out. And I like to have people explore this concept of the veterinary athlete. Like, put this on the table and think, to if we can have a mindset that we understand, and I'm not suggesting that vets start pinning on numbers and competing in anything, but the idea that the idea that you have to understand the game of vet medicine, if you will, and you have to have the physical and emotional capacity to be successful in that. And just like an athlete has to understand, the offense and the defense and the X's and O's or whatever that is, that's the academics of vet medicine, and it is obviously needed. But then to have the physical and emotional capacity to actually utilize that knowledge is really kind of like the missing piece that obviously leads to burnout. From a practical standpoint, I like to have open and honest communication with leadership and have them feel like they can be open and honest with their team and saying, hey, let's talk about being more durable, helping us all, leadership included, be more physically and emotionally durable. We can talk about having how physical exercise, for example, has a direct relationship to your stress management, to your stress resilience. We know that there are super stressful things in vet medicine that just aren't going to go away. There's going to be, a certain type of client that comes through the door that may be stressful. There's going to be euthanasia. There's going to be really tough clinical decisions that you have to make. Those things are never going away. So how do we fortify that? How do you build resilience to that? And that is through physical exercise. We talk about having rest breaks, and even just talking to somebody about this, like after euthanasia, giving anybody that was involved in that a 5 or 10 minute timeout, solo time. And not that that person can't push through, because they can do it, they know what they're doing, but to think that a euthanasia has no effect on somebody is ludicrous. Of course it does. And on the one hand, some of the pushback is, oh, we don't have time for that. We don't have to, like, oh, we don't have to, the more people to see. And those same people say, oh my gosh, we're super busy because we just lost another staff person because they were burned out. Like, we need to kind of start connecting the dots and saying maybe some of these systems, they don't have to be a wholesale change, but being a little thoughtful, following the science, and getting the whole team on board, because it's your euthanasia right now, it's mine tomorrow. It's like we're all in this together. So let's kind of do a little, shifting of duties momentarily can make a huge impact. So we really have to get buy-in. And then I guess the last point I'll make on this, before I keep stacking up my soapbox here, is the concept of having a break room that also supports one that gets utilized. So you can take an actual break. Maybe this kind of ties in with a little bit of quiet time after a stressful case, but also recognizing that it helps to have healthy options in a break room for nutrition, for fueling.
Yes.
We all know we all probably understand pretty well the caffeine buzz and maybe that's those sweet cookies that Mrs. Smith brought in because she loves us so much. And you put one or two of those in your mouth and it feels okay in the moment. But we're all bound by physiology, and what goes up is going to come down. So when that sugar crash happens, we've probably all felt it. You get a little hangry, you get a little fuzzy headed, you kind of, start craving that next thing. I'm not anti-donut or anti-cookie, but I am pro saying at least have some healthy, positive fuel in the break room just to give people, set people up for success, and let this
Yeah,
support them.
I love that. And it was I was like, oh my God, no, we gotta still have some donuts. No, but
For
I'm
sure.
kidding, though. I'm kidding. But no, it is nice to have some healthy snacks, without a doubt. There was a clinic, as you were talking about this, I was actually thinking of this one practice I'll never forget. the break room, and I'll use air quotes to the listeners here, because their break room consisted of all the laboratory diagnostics that were in there. So the centrifuges and, all the syringes, and there was nothing for them to really decompress. And I went in there, and here was this one technician, and she was having air quotes again, a lunch break. But she's eating and she's also looking at like the centrifuges and she's doing the diagnostics. I was like, "Are you on your lunch break?" She's like, "Yeah, but I'm here and I might as well just help out." I'm like, "That's not a break.
Yes. Yeah. You're
you
recharging
know,
now?
right? That's multitasking at its worst right now, And she's like, "Well, I just want to help out the team." I was like, "But you're not helping out yourself by doing
No.
that,
And you're not helping out the team. I think this
right?"
is, if I could probably the if I could change one thing in vet med, just by snapping my fingers, I would say it would be this badge of honor of burdening myself with more than I can tolerate. I'll just
Right.
do it. I'll just do this. I'll take care of it. And then it's those same people that, again, the heart's in the right place. They're, in the industry for the love of animals, and it's pure. It's the most noble profession in the world. And yet people are just like, taking the shovel and digging their own hole.
Yeah.
Man, if you want to help out your team, don't stare at a centrifuge while you're having lunch.
Right.
You're not helping anybody. Instead, unplug just for a few minutes. Go outside, go for a walk for 5 minutes. I mean, and still, like, if you're short on time, I give talks on nutrition to vets, and it's like, I'm okay, because again, I come from the human side of things. I own my own practice, and so I understand the idea of, if I can't walk and eat, it's not going to happen. So, being super practical, but recognizing that, in your example, that is not us. You're not setting somebody up for success. That's a person who's like on the conveyor belt to burnout, and it's ridiculous.
You bring up a good point too, and you know what happens is that sets up the example of what a break should be with what she's doing, and then heaven forbid she's actually maybe in her car on a break and chilling and doing, oh my God, oh, she's being lazy is really what it gets perceived as.
Yes.
And that just right, and that just grinds my gears when you see that. You're like, no, not at all. Like,
No, that should be the role model. And I think that
right.
it's, and again, this is where having a system and culture change and leadership buy-in, that's like, okay, we need to, instead of somebody coming into this and just kind of harp on your examples, instead of coming in and seeing like, oh, so and so, she's, such a go-getter.
Yeah, she's powering through.
Look at her, like, she's the role model. I want somebody to come in
Yeah.
and say, like, you're going to get proverbially written. You consider this a verbal warning.
Yes.
You, in one, I mean, again, the environment's not even set up the right way for many reasons, but to say, you need to get out of here. Like, you need to go, because I need you the second half of the day. And if your, eyes are crossed because you're staring at a centrifuge while you're trying to eat, like, you're going to be no use to me at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And I need
Yes.
you then.
Yeah. I like that. There was a system that we had in place when I was in full-time practice, when we were always had at least three doctors on at the shift, and so we were able to see the schedule. And so when someone had to deal with the euthanasia, we always, and this is something that we did at our doctors meeting, and we addressed this, and I think it worked beautifully, is we always address the other doctor and the team and make sure they're okay afterwards. And whether it be like, do you want to go outside for a walk for a little bit? I would literally stop what I'm doing and say, I'll be right back. If I wasn't the one doing the euthanasia, but my fellow doctor was, and I could just see it on their face, I just needed to unplug for a little bit, I got your back. And I was like,
Yes.
let's go, because it's going to happen to me in maybe 15 minutes. So
Exactly.
I might need
Exactly.
you. But what are your thoughts on that? The fact that you have like this buddy system checking in on each other throughout the day.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I think that it kind of ties into it's we're all in this together. Again, the veterinary athlete concept, we're all on a team. The
Yeah.
success of the team has, we're only as strong as we're weakest, the weakest link, as cliche as that is. And if you have a key player who's, frontline, they do a euthanasia, and they're, that was after staring at a centrifuge during their 15-minute pseudo lunch time. They haven't hydrated, and it's like, man, if that's the person that you need to rely on, it doesn't help the patient. It doesn't help the reason why everybody's there. So if you had a buddy, whether it's a leadership or just a peer-to-peer, two-person or three-person team, if you will. And you also like, I want to help you out. You're going to help me out. And I know the look in your eye, because I've been
Yes,
there, because I just came
yes.
off that. That was me yesterday or last week. We can all relate to that. And I think that is absolutely a key to success and sustainability. it's realistic, and you can play the games of like swapping around the teams, and it could be schedule based, and also, who are buzz, maybe who's, I talk a lot about leadership, and I don't mean necessarily always mean the boss, the owner of the practice. I think that there are leaders sprinkled throughout, on the
Right.
floor, and to really leverage those people, their strengths, their leadership, to make sure that they both get support, but they can also give support. I think that's key, huge.
Yeah, excellent. Great information here, my friend. Aaron Shaw, always dropping off some great little tidbits here. Where can we learn more about you?
Well, I'm always active on LinkedIn, so you can check me out on LinkedIn, and you can check out my website at projectvetspan.com. And I love to have conversations like this. So if anybody's out there and is just kind of curious what this would look like to try to build a more durable vet team, I'd love having these conversations and kicking around ideas and brainstorming, and I'm here to help.
Yeah, I do want to recommend and echo what you just said. This is why we have guests on the podcast, the listeners, and they have reached out, Aaron, which is great with our guests. And please, I personally know Aaron. He is a great friend, a great human being, and somebody that will really be in your corner if you're struggling with anything. But then also with, processes and systems in practice that just seem broken, reach out to him. Having somebody on the outside to look in with a different lens really will open things up for you all. So I think, can't say enough wonderful things about you. So thank you for all that you do.
Oh, glad to be here. I'm glad to help.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for being on the show. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Don't forget to rate the podcast as we continue to grow. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast Podcast. Take care, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast Podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay possum. Awesome.